The World Health Organization defines addiction as a chronic relapsing condition. Dahab Private Hospital recognizes that addiction is a multifaceted illness affecting an individual's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and practical well-being. With 28 and 90-day residential rehabilitation programs and Dahab's accredited private health fund approved treatment service, you or your loved one can get the help you need to navigate the rehabilitation process to regain control, to overcome that addiction, and to take back your life. If this resonates, then take the first step and call Dahab Private Hospital for addiction treatment. Addiction is treatable and recovery is possible. 1-800-329-422 or dahab.com.au. Dahab is one word, D-A-Y-H-A-B, dahab.com.au. Hi everyone, welcome to the You Project. Hi Melissa.
Hello.
Are you all right?
I'm great, thank you.
It's an early morning for you.
It is.
What time did you spring out of bed? Now we're recording this at 8 a.m. Well, it's not even 8 a.m. as he looks at it. Well, it's nearly 8 a.m. on a Friday in Melbs. What time did you spring out of bed to battle the traffic?
I was up at 5 just because I wanted to get a couple of things done.
A couple of star jumps.
Yes.
A few jumping jacks, a few windmills. A
couple of forward rolls.
Downward dogs. Do you do a forward roll out of your bed like a fucking urban ninja?
How did you know?
Yeah, I've got a video. That's creepy. No, I don't. Oops, let's start again. Hi, everyone. Joining me in the studio today is Ken Baldwin. Ken has been in the fitness industry possibly for longer than me. He's old as fuck, but I like him because he's kind of like a bald version of me. Hi, mate.
Good morning, Craig. Thanks for having me on the program today.
Thanks for being had, son. Now, you've come all the way from Queensland, not just to see me, but part of it was to come down here to be on the You Project because we have a common interest. So where we're going today, folks, is this will be interesting for most people, but it's going to be particularly interesting for people in the fitness, health, wellness, medical space because we want to talk about where the fitness industry is at, where it's been, where it's going, and it's just a conversation around that. But I started working in fitness in 1982 as a gym instructor. Had no idea what I was doing and have been in and around the fitness industry ever since. But it's definitely been a big evolution. But when did your journey start?
About 1986, I come from a military background, so I did over 20 years as a physical training instructor in the Australian Air Force and got out, transitioned due to my fitness background into the fitness industry from there. So within the Air Force, my background was rehab and getting soldiers ready for deployment, working with the doctors and so on and so forth and doing their programming and keeping them fit and healthy and mind active, ready to go and be deployed.
And so when you're a fitness instructor in the, did you say Navy or Army?
Air Force.
I can come on harps, it's early. I knew it was some arm of the military. In the Air Force, do you need to come in with an accreditation or a qualification, or do you go in and you get trained in their modality of training and exercise and physical preparation?
So basically you go in and you get trained. So you transition from another division within the Air Force and you get selected for that and you get trained and do that. It's now tri-service training, so Army, Navy, Air Force down at Cerberus.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wowza. And what was that like working in that space with in the military, training people to essentially go to war?
Pretty invigorating, very challenging. The biggest challenge that we faced, of course, is the time factor and getting people right to do what they have to do and keeping them physically fit. And, of course, when they go away, there's the mental side of things as well because they're always on call, ready, waiting, having to do stuff. So they need to be in the right mindset as well.
Let's fast forward to now. What do you do now?
So now I'm a personal trainer. I'm a director of training and education for a couple of companies that we run, Perform Better Australia and the Healthy Aging Institute.
What's the Healthy Aging Institute? It sounds good.
So the Healthy Aging Institute is a new project of ours because we've generally transitioned into what you call the older demographic. Mm. Both myself and the majority of my clients and my people that I teach. So we focus on high-end education and training and products for people working with the older demographic.
Mm. How old are you?
I'm 55.
Just a kid, Melissa. When are you 56?
56 in April.
Damn, I'm older than him. It's an interesting thing, aging, because, and I talk about it all the time, and people, I think some people probably think I'm a bit more fascinated with it now that I'm old, but I've always been interested in the way that people age and the way that people think about aging and the way that people talk about aging and the way that people manage themselves as they chronologically age. And you and I were talking, we just had a coffee, as I do with most people before a podcast, we're talking about the way that some of us, some of the population, just switch off, you know, as in that they stop learning, they stop using their brain, they stop training, they stop using their body even in a way that we did when we were younger. And I've said this lots of times, and I don't mean to bore people, but in my mid-50s, I think my brain is better than it's ever been, and my mind and my recall and my creativity and productivity, my ability to think clearly, to communicate, to do what I do, all that stuff, I feel better now than when I was 35. And even, you know, I guess physically too, I feel as good. I have a few more aches and pains, but I still feel strong, and I'm still lean, and I'm still fit, and I have no fucking flexibility whatsoever. I was going to lie, and then zero flexibility. I'm like a fucking house brick.
I'm with you on that.
but and it's not, you know, this is what I want people to get their head around, and it's not aging, oh, we're in our 50s and 60s or whatever. No, it's aging from 30. It's because once you hit even 30, things start to change a little. And once you hit 40, and I'm generalizing here, but things start to change a lot. And once you hit 50, if you're not doing something proactively and consciously, if you're not consciously doing things to turn back the clock or at least maintain what you've got, this is going to sound harsh, but I think you're an idiot. I think you're an idiot because you can't get another body. And you know, but it is so easy. It is so possible to be able to manage your body, manage your mind, manage your lifestyle, manage your nutrition, manage your exercise regime in a way that keeps you younger, literally younger. And I don't mean chronologically younger, but from an experiential point of view. So you feel and you look and you function like somebody who might be 5 or 10 years younger than your actual chronological age. So what have you been learning operating in this space, working with people, you know, in the area of keeping themselves younger and performing better as they age?
So the two key things for me is movement is the foundation for life. If we don't continue to move, we slow down, and if we don't use it, we lose it. Mm. The other thing is that as we age, our reaction time slows down and the brain loses its ability to memory retention, to do things and store things, and it prioritizes things in different parts of the brain. So if we're not continually challenging it, it stores it away as a memory that can be lost. Mm. So what we have to do is continually putting it to the front of the brain and remaining actively engaged. So not just physically, we have to challenge the brain in everything we do in the environment, regardless of what we're in. We have to challenge it and make sure that our brain remains active. And if we continually do both of those things together, movement for everyday life, not just in the gym, not just doing activities that we do every day, but challenging it in some small way, but integrating the brain into that, that's our successful transition, because the brain continually learns, as you say, and we can continue to do that in our 50s and as we age.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago, I've told that story, so I won't relive it in its full, but I remember working with a friend. One of my then trainers who worked for me, her dad was very elderly and weak, and I started training him in a wheelchair, and she asked me to work with him, and I worked for him for 6 months, and he went from completely being dependent on people to being completely independent in 6 months, back to driving, back to walking, back to living by himself and being able to function. And that was purely, and he was in his 80s, Abraham his name was, and he was, he'd never been in a gym, he'd never exercised in a kind of a systemized way other than incidental stuff. And it was just amazing to see even a body in 80, in its, what's that, ninth decade, and a brain and a mind and even the lifestyle wrapped around it all started to evolve. And not only did his body change, not only did he go from being wheelchair bound to walking with a frame to walking with sticks to walking, still walked with one stick, and from completely in, completely dependent to mostly independent, bit of help from people, of course, but living by himself and cooking for himself, feeding himself. And not only that, but all the emotional and cognitive and social stuff changed as well. And he went from being unhappy to happy and depressed to joyful and feeling like a burden to being someone who was contributing and doing things. And so what I think is great, and I know that, and the reason that we got together is because you asked me to talk at your conference, and I'm happy. I don't promote many things on this show unless it's something that I'm genuinely passionate about. I'm passionate about helping people as they age, and it's not just about what's happening with your body. It's also, I see so many people in this 40, 50, 60, 70 year, and I know that's a big range, but I see so many people in that space who are starting to get sad and lonely and disconnected and anxious and depressed. And not that, you know, not that running on a treadmill is a standalone answer or doing a group exercise class is a standalone answer. But I really think that it's important that people who are heading towards that midlife kind of stage and they are starting to get there and beyond, that there's information, that there's support, that there's services available for people. And so the Healthy Aging Summit is in Brisbane next March on the 27th and 29th. And whether or not you're a fitness professional, and I'm not being paid for this and I don't need to do this, I'm just doing this because I actually think it's a fucking great thing. And so we're starting to open the door on helping older people become less old. You know, that's the way that I look at it. And yeah, you know, aging, biological aging is of course inevitable, but the way that we age is optional. So I'm excited about that. And so I'll be speaking at that as well as a bunch of other world-class speakers. So if you can get along to that. I know we normally don't give plugs at this stage, but how do they? How do people? So if you're a fitness professional, health professional, wellness professional, you're in the space, how do people book for that or how do they find it?
Jump straight onto the website, www.healthyagingsummit.com.au.
Awesome. Now, one of the reasons you came down was because you contacted me when we said, if you want to come in the studio and talk to me and ask me a few questions or get some free coaching or advice or just have a meaningful fucking interaction and a cuddle. And you went, hey, I would like to do that. And that's part of the reason that you came down. So I'm going to hand over the reins to you. So no pressure. Feel free to ask me anything you want. Don't fuck it up.
Thanks very much for that.
It's all right, mate.
I think I'd like to go back to the terminology that many people use, us being dinosaurs, because our industry has a trend of short-term burnout, very, very much so. So the average life of a personal trainer is a maximum of about 18 months.
Wow.
Which is quite horrifying for many reasons, but the people in the industry that really believe in it, really passionate about it, are sustainable. Mm. They've been in there for many, many years because they believe it's a lifestyle, not a job, which is great. Mm. But many things change with our industry, and I think something that we really need to look at, and we don't enough, is looking at how we can adapt to change. And it's a big thing in business. Businesses find a successful model and they stick to that model, but business surroundings change around them and they don't adapt to that. And I think it's really important that we look at the changes in the industry and how things have changed since we've been in when we started and what we go through and our sort of journey.
What do you think? Why do you think that there's such a high turnover in a short time with personal trainers? I've got some thoughts, but why do you think that it's such a short lifespan for the average?
Well, personal training itself started as a high-end demand item, you know, for celebrities and things like that. And if you were good at something, whether it was, you know, an activity, a fitness activity, you could say, oh, I'm good at that. I'm gonna train people around that. And it sort of developed around that area. But we know that personal training is more along a coaching role, and a lot of personal trainers, it appeals to the young demographic because our whole industry is about looking good as well as feeling good. Mm. But there's lots of trainers out there that are fit but not healthy, and that's another key point that we should talk about. But I think it is all about the trainers aren't given the lifestyle or business acumen to be able to run a business, rather than they might be great at training, great at doing physical activity, but can they relate to people? Can they teach it and can they train it? And I think that's a big thing in our industry that's missing, but has changed a lot now.
I reckon the idea of personal training and the reality are poles apart.
Absolutely.
I think the idea of being a trainer has a really sexy fucking image, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I'll just – how much do they get? Oh, 70, 80 bucks an hour, 90, 100 bucks an hour, or whatever it is. Crazy money, by the way, I think. But anyway, you know, you think 80 bucks an hour, you go, well, fuck, if I do 5 hours a day, that's 400 bucks. If I do that 5 days a week, that's $2,000. That's 100 grand for doing a part-time job. 5 hours a day, and people, and you're like, yeah, you just do the numbers, mate, you'll fucking kill it. Yeah, it's different. It's different because when you get away from that theoretical kind of 100 grand and you step out on the gym floor and you've got egos, attitudes, personalities, you've got people who expect a certain level of knowledge and focus and intention and excellence and professionalism and skill and experience, and then you step out there and you don't give a fuck. Or you give a fuck for the first two, but then you're tired because you had a bender the night before, or because you've got a problem going on with your missus or your husband or whatever, and you drag your bullshit into the space that you shouldn't drag your bullshit into, then all of a sudden you're not being professional, and all of a sudden you're not being present, and all of a sudden people are going to see you because there's so many fucking options. So the first thing is, I think, if you're going to be a personal trainer, you need to really, really understand what it is. What it isn't is you being on the gym floor fucking wandering around in a tracksuit just high-fiving people. It's you being a highly professional, highly focused coach with integrity who wants to genuinely help individuals change the direction of their life through their health and wellness and exercise and nutrition. And it is, I think sadly that personal trainers have been, the personal training profession has been damaged by some people who aren't particularly good at what they do and possibly shouldn't be in the industry. But, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, and I think that happens in all industries. And if I'm being completely honest, there were periods of my personal training journey where I wasn't as good as I should have been. And I could honestly, hand on heart, look back at times when I was doing way too many clients, and there were times when I should have backed off because I was in demand and I was busy and I had a brand and I had a profile, so I could kind of get away with it. And that was wrong, you know. And so I think especially now, most of the time I think I did somewhere between a pretty good job and a really good job. But, you know, I think we need to recognize, one, how many sessions we can do a day. If you're a trainer or any kind of fitness professional delivering a product or a service, how much of that thing can you do? One session, two session, 10 a day, three, five classes, one class, whatever it is, and be fucking amazing at it. And if the answer is I can do two, well, then two's your limit, right? And I think also, as you said, helping fitness professionals, be they whatever, trainers or group X teachers or swim teachers or whoever they are, whatever their specific role is, to be able to understand the totality of what you are doing. Yes, you need to understand the anatomy and physiology and biomechanics and science of exercise programming and adaptation and all of that stuff. But ultimately, you're a teacher and a coach and a mentor. So communication is paramount. Engagement is paramount. Understanding people is paramount. If you're great at the science of exercise, but you're not great at the science of people, you ain't going to have a career. And so I think people go into the fitness industry with rose-coloured glasses, which is not to say it's not a great space to inhabit, but I think they go in with rose-coloured glasses, not really understanding what it is they're getting into. Even for me, when I was young and I was, you know, I was into bodybuilding and I was into training and I became a trainer and I was working with my clients and everything was going well and I was working at Trackside Sports down here in Hampton about 500 meters away and I was training people on the gym floor, blah, blah, blah. And then I had this idea that I'm going to set up a standalone facility and it's like in my mind it was just, you know, one fucking highlight reel after another of me just wandering around my own space. Then the reality of, okay, now I've got a landlord and now I've got rent and now I've got staff and now I've got tax and now I've got administration, now I've got to fire people and now I've got to solve all these problems and now I've got to maintain all this equipment and now... And then all the stuff that I loved faded way into the background because what dominated my energy and my time and my thinking was just managing a company and growing a brand. And that's okay if that's what you want to do, but I think you need to realize what you're getting into. And if you're going to be a personal trainer working under someone else's banner as your own micro business, or you're going to have your own kind of standalone thing, you need to understand that, yeah, being able to train and prescribe exercise matters, but also being able to build and grow a brand matters as well.
Absolutely. So our industry is based on trends and fads and the next shiny object comes along and trainers get fixated in that. So not putting it down at all, but CrossFit is a good example of that.
Yeah.
That's the next best thing, and because it creates these results. How do you see from a trainer's perspective, so you want to integrate that style of training into your client's training,
yeah,
but how do you individualize it? I think that's the big issue with the trainers. They say, okay, CrossFit's really good to build my body and give me upper body strength. Mm. I'm going to use these methods, but some bodies aren't made for that.
Mm.
How do trainers and how would you see that we look at integrating trends into the way that we train and ensure that we look at that individuality?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one of the challenges and one of the dangers around exercise programming is that every person who prescribes exercise, including me and you, has an emotional attachment to certain kinds of exercise and preferences. I think separating group exercise, which is good. I've never done a CrossFit class in my life. I've never been to a CrossFit box. But I think that they're a great business model. And I think for a lot of people, what they offer is really appropriate. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's for everybody, just like I don't think personal training's bad or for everybody, just like I don't think Pilates is good or bad, or I think Pilates is good. I think everything serves a purpose, but there's a big difference between, oh, I'm really into CrossFit, or I'm really into bodybuilding, or I'm really into functional training, or I'm really into whatever, that compared to I am now writing you a personalized individual program based on your physiological needs, your background, your medical history, your injuries, your goals. And so, I mean, we had this conversation at the cafe, whereas exercise programming at its core, at its pure core, is sitting with a person, and this is what every fucking trainer should be doing for every client individually, is a thorough assessment. Who are you? Where are you at? Let's do a strength test, or let's do a range of tests. So basic body weight test or whatever, fitness, flexibility, range of movement around joints, whatever's relative to that person, VO2 max, sub VO2 max, whatever you want to do, girth measurements if that matters, body composition if that matters, whatever you think, you know, blood pressure, whatever measures you need to take. And then based on where that person's been and where they are and where they want to go with their body, write a program specific to them. And that may or may not involve your preferred mode of exercise, right? So when someone comes to me, let's say I love bodybuilding because I'm an old bodybuilder, so I just go in the gym and do all my normal bullshit. But that kind of works for me. I do a bit of cardio. I don't eat shit. I never really get out of shape. I'm not the fittest I could be, but I'm quite fit from an aerobic point of view. I'm quite strong, and so I'm kind of okay where I am. But if somebody comes to the gym and I essentially write them a program which is reflective of how I train, that's not exercise programming. That's not a personalized prescription. That's a doctor who hands out the same pill for all the different conditions. You know, it's analogous to a medical professional who gives everybody the same medication because that's the one that he or she prefers. And so I think that the challenge is that it just takes effort and it just takes time and it's just work to be able to prescribe the right, and it's all educated guessing, of course. Right, we don't know how any stimulus will affect a person until we put that stimulus in place and see how their physiology responds around it, whether or not that's an exercise program or a certain diet or whatever it is. But yeah, I think the being able to, you know, like if you came to me and you went, mate, this is what a general fitness, general health, general wellness, I've got no injuries, I'd say, all right, well, let's do a bit of this, bit of that. And if you enjoy CrossFit or you like that idea, chuck in a class or two a week, because that kind of fits in. And I definitely think in that kind of setting or that kind of with that kind of need, then chucking in a class or two of CrossFit is good. And I think, but also I think, and we spoke about this before, we were talking about an organization called Curves that Mary Harper, God bless her, goes to every now and then because she just fucking dodders around the room with the other girls and has a natter. So, and I think we also need to be evolved enough and humble enough to go, you know what, is Curves the optimal, is it the optimal exercise program? Probably not, because it's generic and it's everyone's kind of doing the same thing. Does that mean it's bad? No, not at all. Because what it means is that somebody like my mum, who's not, when she's not going to the other gym doing the program that I've written, but three times a week or whatever, she goes to Curves, which is a circuit-based format. It's only ladies. They all chat. They love it. Most of them are at 50 plus. My mum loves that environment, loves the culture, loves the girls, and looks forward to going. So I think with any kind of exercise thing that we put in place, it matters that we've got the right prescription, I guess, but it also matters too that the person will keep doing it. So, and this is going to sound contrary to what I just said, but in some ways, I'd rather my mum following a 7 out of 10 program that she does all the time than a 10 out of 10 program that she hates and does once.
That's perfect, because there are a couple of things there that are really important from an aging perspective, but also from a gym perspective. So most people, they look at they don't look at the emotional side of thing. So trainers should be starting to look at the assessing, really getting to know their clients. But it boils down to functionality, not fitness. Mm. Because as we age, we've got to look at life skills far more so. It's not about what we do in the gym. The gym enhances what we do for life.
Correct.
So we have to look at those things. But we have to look at the emotional side. As we age, our wants and our needs and our goals change specifically. Mm. And with trainers, we get into our rut of, you know, we got to slam people to get results. Mm. And that works in our 20s and 30s. In the 30s, they're looking for weight loss and they're looking for different types of things. But when we start to hit those 40s and the 40s plus, you know, the goals change. It's more about an emotional as well as a physical thing for performance from a work and a life background. So we need to look at a functionality with physicality and emotion. But the other thing that everything that you've spoken about there is comes back to professional development and education from a trainer, and I think this is where we're missing out. We spoke about the brain earlier, where if the brain isn't stimulated, it shuts down and it needs to continually learn. Every other job in the world out there to be promoted, you have to have some sort of professional development. Now, some trainers are absolutely fantastic in that, and they go out and they learn more and they develop that into their skill set. But we place it as second best. So a lot of trainers will go out and they'll learn more about CrossFit or learn more about a program, but they're forgetting about the professional development of their own to allow them to have better coaching skills to allow them to deliver the programs better and to relate to people better. And I think that's a big thing, both from a trainer's perspective and looking at an aging demographic as well.
I reckon personal development in all professions is underrated. You know, professional development and personal development kind of go hand in hand. But I think you're right. In the fitness industry, we see a lot of people who do their certification and then they've got to accrue a certain amount of points every 2 years. Is it 18 or something?
20 now, yes.
20 now. And some people are very diligent and very professional and very ethical around how, like, they want to do the best thing to learn them. But then there are others who go, fuck, what's the easiest way I can get these points because I really don't give a fuck. And so is there any shortcut? Is there some online thing that I can do? And I think people don't understand, you know, like, the bottom line is the better that you are, not just at prescribing exercise, but as a communicator, as a business person, as someone who can market and brand themselves well, as someone who understands human behavior, as someone who can keep themselves in a place mentally, and like the better shape you are in. Forget the job, forget the task, forget the requirements of being a PT or a fitness professional, but just take it back to you. How do you self-manage in the middle of the mayhem? How do you, as a fitness professional, manage your mind, your emotions, your energy, your life, your body, so that when you show up, you're fucking ready and you're good and you're an inspiration and you're the person that people want to be around, not, oh, you're just some dude or some girl who just learned some shit and you've got this bit of paper and I'm going through the motions. So many people that I see, and some, this will bother some people, don't care, there's a shock. So many people that I see in lots of industries, by the way, on the gym floor look like fucking robots, where this is just, they're just appointment after appointment after appointment. There's no excitement. There's no joy. There's no energy. It's just like a production line. And I just think, me as a client, I don't want to be paying for that. I don't want to be paying for that. And so I think it's really important that, and as I said before, I put up my hand, I go, I recognize that I did that for a while because I did so many for so long and I had to constantly go to the room of mirrors and have a look and go, come on, you're shit house. And I think part of personal growth and part of excellence and part of success and part of high performance is our willingness to go, right, I'm the problem. I'm the problem. It's not the gym. It's not the owner. It's not the industry. It's not the market. It's me. You think about this, and I've always said this to trainers. Here's the truth. What's the typical hourly rate now, Ken, for a trainer, PT, give or take?
About $75.
Okay. Think about this, $75. So if you have, I don't know how it is, I haven't trained people one-on-one for a while, other than a few broken people that I help at the moment, God bless them, and hello, Johnny, and the crab. Crab, come on, son. So you think about this. If you have, let's say, 8 clients, and each of those clients do, no, let's say 10 clients, and each of them do 2 sessions a week. Well, there's 20 sessions. There's 20 hours. 20 times 75 is $1,500, right? And that's for 10 clients. And if you're good, those clients will stay for a long time. My clients stayed for years, not because I was incredible, but because I just built really nice relationships with people. They trusted me, they liked me, I was professional, and I gave a shit about them. So you think about, I'm not saying that's easy, but it's a relatively simple formula. Well, if I've got 20 people and I'm getting an average of, sorry, I've got 10 people doing 2 a week, that's 20 sessions at 75, there's $1,500. See, the difference between something like having a personal training business and being a hairdresser or something is that, like, with a hairdresser, you might see that client once every 3 months, or you might see them once a fortnight, or in your case or my case, never. You might never see us, right? And I think it's not that complicated, but you have to make sure that you can consistently give those people, and not just in a training sense, but as an experience, because every hour that they are coming to you, they're coming, yes, they're coming for education and inspiration, and to do a workout, but it's also about the totality of the experience. And one of the things that, and this is a really fundamental thing that I think we should ask ourselves, no matter what service we provide or what industry we're in, and this is not coming from a place of insecurity, but rather awareness, is do people like being around me? Do people like being around me? And then ignorant people would say, oh, I don't give a fuck, as long as like, well, if you don't give a fuck, you're an idiot. Because the bottom line is if people don't enjoy being around you, then you're not going to have a business. You're not going to have people who want to keep coming back over time. And so it's that combination of can I train people well? Do I know how to run a business? And also, am I creating an environment and experience that people want to keep coming back to?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there from a couple of perspectives. The first one is if you go back to group fitness classes and good group fitness instructors, and when I'm teaching training along those areas, I said, what's the difference between a good group fitness instructor and a bloody awesome fitness instructor? Mm. And the answer to that is, well, a good group fitness instructor can pull that performance out of their ass occasionally. Mm. A great group fitness instructor has awesome communication skills. They give themselves 100% to the class. They walk in and say, I'm not worried about anything that's happening outside mm-hmm. this class at this time. Yeah. I'm going to give myself to you to create that environment, to create that socialization. Yeah. And the biggest difference and shift in the aging demographic is they don't come for the workout. And that's the big secret that people don't understand. It's all about the socialization. It's all about creating a network where you're part of their family, where they can interact with you. They enjoy coming. They enjoy that experience, not only from you, but from other people around them. Mm. And you're creating that positive environment. Mm. Trainers have to get out of the mindset where they come in and you've got that 35 minutes with them and then they're forgotten about. What about when they leave? You need to create an environment where they're really focused with you and doing what you're doing when you're with them, but also giving them the tools to have them enjoying things outside the gym when they're away from you. And that's really, really important with the aging demographic. And we're getting older, living longer, and we're going to have clients for life if we look after that aging demographic. They're going to be there and keep coming back because it's part of their life. It's not just a routine. And the socialization is a really big part of that. How would you look at that? Because we've spoken about the emotional and the behavioral side of things, because you can't change somebody physically if they're in the wrong mindset, if they're in the wrong emotional set. Yeah. How do we get that across to trainers?
I think that as... I reckon trainers need to see themselves also as coaches and mentors and teachers, because if you're a trainer, you're a coach. You're coaching someone through a process.
Absolutely.
You're also a teacher. You're also a mentor. You're helping somebody. You're helping somebody manage their mind and manage their choices and manage their behaviors to manage their body, to manage their energy, to manage a better life, right? We think this is about bums and legs and fucking micros and macros. It's about life. And that's not overselling it. And that's why I've always thought personal training is such an influential job. It is such an important job done the right way. And I was talking yesterday, I did a gig for the boys and girls of Vision Personal Training up in Sydney with Simo. And shout out to them. What a great team. And we were talking about this idea of the big picture. And, you know, so there's 168 hours in a week. And if I train Ken 2 hours a week, then I'm not with Ken 166 hours a week. And so as somebody who is helping you on a journey of transformation and education and, you know, improving function and all of those things, my philosophy on personal training is it is about all of the 168, not just the two. So my philosophy is I might go, all right, mate, you and I are seeing each other Monday and Thursday for an hour. We're going to spend every Monday and Thursday training for 45 minutes and talking and coaching and mentoring and preparing and reviewing for 15. So then I'm going to talk to you on the Thursday for 15 minutes about what's happened between Monday and now. We're going to talk about your sleep. We're going to talk about your energy. We're going to talk about your choices. We're going to talk about the way that you socialize. I'm going to have a look at the diary that you've filled out because that's one of my rules, right? And so I think that to make it a really healthy, bigger than just, you know, what we don't want is we don't want personal trainers just to be people who set the treadmill, adjust the bike seat and count reps. We want it to be a collaborative process. Oh, I like that term, Melissa. We want it to be a collaborative process between the trainer and the trainee, so that, okay, let's figure out, so I'm training you now, Ken, where are you, where do you want to be? All right, let's talk about all the variables. And between us, let's create a plan. So now we've got something bigger than just two workouts. Now we've got a plan. And we might even involve a dietitian or a psychologist or a doctor or a physio. So now we're starting to create a method and a big picture plan to help you age well, right? Because training matters, but it's not all that matters. Your body matters, but it's not all that matters. Nutrition matters, but it's not all that matters. And so I always say to people, think about how much time you would spend. Like if I gave you $1 million and said, mate, here's a block of land overlooking the ocean at Portsea. Here's $1 million. You got to build a house. Well, you wouldn't start building the house tomorrow. You'd spend probably 12 months planning, organizing, getting all the right people, getting the carpenters and the architects and the landscape gardeners and the interior decorators and designers. And you'd get all this group of people to help you build this house that you want to inhabit. So how much more important is to build a life that you want to inhabit? And so I think if we can, I think if we can look at creating a better life and a better health state and a better body and a better level of performance as a project, you know, for me, I get excited about projects. But I think the challenge is, and I'm getting deep now, the challenge is that we live largely unconsciously. That is, we live on autopilot. And we when we talk about our individual relationship with food or our individual relationship with exercise or our body, or we do things on autopilot. And the challenge is to start to become more self-aware and more conscious about, how do I manage my body really? How do I manage my relationship with food? And again, this is high-level stuff, but I think this is where trainers need to get. Now, before someone goes, oh, yeah, but you're not a psychologist, you're not a dietitian, I know that. I'm not saying we're prescribing a diet. I'm not saying that we're pretending we're psychologists. But what I'm saying is, and I said this to the team from Vision yesterday, you don't need a fucking degree to tell your client that Cocoa Pops are not a good breakfast, right? You don't need to be a psychologist to say, hey, stop calling yourself a fuckwit. That's not healthy, right? There are conversations that we can have which are just human conversations with other humans about the way that we self-manage. And I think that this is what excites me. This is how I think the personal training space should evolve, so that we're much bigger and better and knowledgeable than sets and reps and progressive overload and speeds and, you know, whatever, micros and macros. We're bigger than that now.
So every successful business person has a successful team behind them. And going back to changes in the industry, so 5-10 years ago, somebody would develop a program and they'd say, oh, no, that's mine. I'm not going to share that with you. I think the industry is starting to shift a lot where we're looking at collaboration. And I think that's a really big thing. We come back to communication, but collaboration is a big thing. We have a scope of practice, as with all jobs, but we need to be able to be in a position where we can communicate and say, you know, I know a great physio, okay, I know a great massage therapist. We're looking at the needs of the individual, and we're creating a good lifestyle team. It might be a nutritionist, it might be all of those. So team collaboration is a really big thing, because aging is a natural process, and as we age, our bodies start to break down. We can't change that, but we can have influence on how quickly that happens by creating a great environment, creating a great team. And the aging demographic specifically looks towards getting you to become part of their family. You're their doctor, you're their accountant. They go to you as a coach, as a mentor, and it's about listening to them, because their conditions change on a daily basis. So you might have the best routine in the world. And if you don't listen to them and say, hey, what's going on? And you had this morning. You were talking to a gentleman in the coffee shop whose mother passed away.
Mm.
You don't know that unless you talk to them, and you can't give them a workout if they're not emotionally involved in that and something else is going on.
Mm.
So it's all about communication, collaboration, working with a great team and creating a positive environment.
Mm.
And I think that's a big change within our industry that a lot of trainers still need to get their heads around. They can't do it all on their own.
Mm.
They need to be educated. They need professional development, and they also need to be able to outsource and have a great team around them.
Yeah. And I think everything you're saying is right. And I think what's really important, Ken, is that we need to be, and this sounds obvious, and this is going to sound like the most naff advice ever, but it doesn't get done, is that we need to be walking the talk. Like everything that I teach, everything I do, right? I don't teach stuff that I don't do. So when I talk about all these ideas and concepts and strategies, either I do them or I've done them. So I think when you are talking to somebody about managing their life and managing their choices and managing their behaviors to create certain outcomes, if this is just some theoretical construct in your head, then you'll never come across as authentic. I think the place that all, and I think this is true for any kind of professional offering any kind of advice or service, the place that we need to start with this is with us, so that, you know, I'm walking the talk. So when I talk about, not that I get everything right all of the time, but when I talk about being consistent, or when I talk about, you know, managing your food or managing your choices, or all this is stuff that I just do and have been doing for years. So it's not like I have to reach into some kind of theoretical bag of tricks and pull out a fucking idea or a strategy that I've never implemented. So that's like when we sit down and have this conversation, I don't need to prepare because I don't need to make things up, you know. And I think that when you are the trainer, the fitness professional, and you are an example of the things that you teach, then it is much easier for you to come across as being authentic and real. And also, you know, people know bullshit. I remember, you know, I taught, I don't know, hundreds, maybe thousands of Cert 3 and 4 classes. I wrote one of the first, if not the first, personal training accreditation in Australia 200 years ago. And I remember I was, this was back in the days when I was possibly even more blunt than now, Melissa, fucking hard to know, hard to believe, I know. But I remember I taught this Cert, I don't know, whatever, fitness instructor or personal training accreditation, can't remember, it's a long time ago. And I had a group of about 30 people. It was just a classroom. It was in Caulfield down there. It was actually called High Energy Network, which went on to become Australian Fitness Academy. I was doing a class and we had a, I don't know, maybe I had a 3-hour session with them and you had a couple of breaks. And it was my first day with this group. And there was a bunch of buffheads up the back who thought they were awesome. And we had a break and they went outside and started smoking. I'm like, me, red flag to a ball. And I just walked outside. I said, how are you going, fellas? They look at me, you know, dragging on their cigarettes. I go, you're all fucking kidding, right? And they look at me like, what? I go, you're kidding, aren't you? And they had no, I go, do you know how ridiculous you look trying to step into a career of health and wellness and prescribing people fitness, and you are out here fucking smoking cigarettes, which we know kills people. We know they're carcinogenic. Apart from the obvious thing that it's a stupid thing for you to do personally, do you know how much credibility you instantly lack? So if I'm going to a trainer and I get any idea that he or she smokes, I'm out. You're not even on my possible list. It doesn't matter how much you know. It doesn't matter how clever you are. I don't give a fuck how big your biceps are. If you smoke, if you don't walk the talk, I'm not interested. And the thing is that, you know, 93% or whatever it is of communication's nonverbal. I don't know. That's what they say. But a lot of it's nonverbal. And what you do tells people who you are, right? And so I'm more interested, like when I'm going to somebody for advice, be that a doctor, be that a physio, be it a dietitian, a psychologist, a personal trainer, I'm this is me. This is the way I'm wired. I'm more interested in how they manage themselves. Because if I go, oh yeah, they do all of this, then I'm on board, then I'll listen. But if I think this is somebody who's just playing a role because that's their job, but they don't actually do any of the stuff they're telling me to do, I don't respect them. So I think the starting point, you know, where do I, how do I build a business? How do I build a brand? How do I get people? Well, walk your talk first. Be the person. Like, if you're not inspired, which is 50% of personal trainers I've met, if you're not inspired, how the fuck can you inspire anyone else? If you're not motivated, right? And this, I think this is just, and by the way, now that doesn't mean we've got to be perpetually in that state of euphoria, but by inspired or motivated, I mean in a good place energetically so that you can step onto the gym floor or the running park or the track or the whatever, and you can be that person who has the appropriate energy and mindset for people to be around, where they're inspired, not just to you sharing good thoughts and ideas and do you have skills, but what's the you experience like? In my last book, 20 Questions for Humans, out now, like that is one of the, and whether or not it's for a trainer or a CEO or a mum or a dad or whoever, I always go, have you ever thought about what it's like being around you? And not from an insecurity perspective, but from a self-awareness perspective. Because if you have no idea of the you experience, guess what? It's going to be hit and miss with all of your clients.
Positivity is the key, because if you're not positive, as you say, it catches on. People see people being positive and they say, I want to be like that. I want to be part of that. So if you can establish that through your communication, everybody needs a routine, but it's got to be a positive routine, because it's so easy to have negativity and get into that rut and stay there. Everybody also needs variety. And as we age, that's clinically more important as well, because yes, that won't stimulate the brain. It won't stimulate the body. So as a trainer, we can't afford to do the same thing all of the time. Results don't equal repetitions.
Mm.
So it's really important that we look at that. We also need to start young. The aging process starts around 40. Our body starts to slow down and we lose our eyesight. We lose different abilities to do things, and the brain starts changing the way that it thinks. And as trainers, we have to start changing the way that we think as well.
Yeah.
And look at one size doesn't fit all. Mm. Look at the individualization and move forward along those lines through professional development and education, because if we don't have the grounding, we can't pass that grounding on.
Mm. And I think it's important that, you know, even like somebody was asking me, we did Melissa and I were in Perth on the weekend. We did a two-day program over there, and quite a few people in the group came up and asked me, because it wasn't a big group, they came up and asked me in our downtime individual questions. And there was one lady in there who had had a particular operation, and she was the, how funny was that lady?
She was hilarious.
This lady, can I say it?
Yeah.
So, and this is not my words, but she'd had an operation on her vagina.
Yes.
And that, these are her words. Well, she'd, you know, I can't, she said about 10 times my fanny's killing me, right? Didn't she? She was hilarious, right? But she'd had a surgery, was it 3 weeks before or 2 weeks before?
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, so she actually contacted me yesterday, but she also asked me a few questions. But she essentially asked me, what do you think, okay, considering where I'm at, what I've had done, blah, 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 because it was a bit more than that, what can I do?
Yeah.
Now, I've written tens of thousands of programs and trained tens of thousands of human beings and been giving out advice around this for 40 years. And the truth is, I don't exactly know. You know why? Because we might have 100 people who have had the same operation at the same age as you, the same amount of time ago, and how you will respond to each exercise or each physical challenge will be different. And so even then, I say to people, you know, this seems bad, but it's just true. Everything is educated guessing. Even doctors, it's educated guessing, which is why a doctor would say something like, all right, well, we'll start you on 75 milligrams of X and then we'll see how that goes and we'll see how you respond, and we might need to go up to 100 or cut it back to 50, or it might not be the right drug for you, but this is where we're starting. Now, that's okay. That's science. That's trial and error, kind of, you know, and that's kind of what science is. And so I think one of the challenges for trainers is being present enough to say, all right, Ken, this is where we're starting. This is what we're doing, mate. So we'll try this way. How's that? yeah, that's light. Cool. Then let's do the next weight. Fine. Let's try this stretch. How's that? Hurts my back. Okay. Well, let's do a similar stretch, but slightly different position. How's that? Oh, that's good. Cool. That's our stretch for that muscle group. Right. And so everything is trial and error, and everything is in the moment and experiential. And when you are that present with a client versus literally, oh, we're doing these 10 exercises. This is what we're doing today. And by the way, this is what I did with my last client, same 10 exercises and the one before, because I can't be fucked thinking and I don't care that much and I don't want to have to work that hard. You know, so that kind of generic application of some program that isn't individualized, and we see that happen a lot. To me, that's the opposite of care. To me, that's the opposite of professionalism. And this is the thing, is that at its highest level, personal training is a really high-level product and service that requires real effort and integrity. But the challenge is, or I guess the downside is, that personal trainers can get away with just kind of going through the motions because their clients perhaps don't know. And so that's, but when you get, you know, I just want to say one thing. When you were talking before also about the experience that we as, so almost the program doesn't matter as much as the experience. Well, clearly the program still matters, right? But as you said, if they hate the experience, they're not coming back, so they don't get the program anyway. Well, I had hundreds of trainers work for me, and a shout out to this, I was going to say young guy. He's not that young anymore, but I love him. His name's Christian Enor. And he's a – Christian worked for me for a long time, or worked under the Harper's banner for a long time, and he's a boxer. And I had a big boxing ring at the back of one of my gyms, which was the Festival Hall boxing ring. So full-size boxing ring, 20 by 20 foot. And that basically was Christian's office, right? And he was always up in the boxing ring at the back of the gym, just chirping out to everyone in the gym, talking shit, being hilarious. And he just had such charisma, has such charisma and such energy and such personality that he would perpetually have a waiting list. Like, people couldn't get in to see him. Yeah, he was a good trainer and all of that. He was a really good trainer. But on top of that, people just wanted to be around him. And then there were other trainers that would work under my banner that would never have fucking work. I'm like, you're in the same place with the same resources and the same opportunities. And they'd constantly be complaining to me about their lack of work. And I'd say, well, what are you doing to create business? And they'd look at me with some fucking bewilderment, right? And then you say, all right, well, that dude up there, he's got the same qualifications as you. He's in the same space as you, with the same resources as you. What do you think the difference is? Do you think I'm the problem? Right? And when you can show up every day, no matter what your job is, and you can, and yeah, you're going to have down days and up days, but for the most part, especially in a service industry like this, if you can be a person that people want to be around, guess what? Your technical knowledge and skills, they matter, but they don't matter that much. Like, I still want you to train people well and don't injure anyone, for God's sake. But what I care about, these were my priorities. Don't injure people. Give them a good experience. And then the rest will come. Then we can worry about the rest. And if they fucking love turning up, great, you're awesome. Now, they love turning up. You've got a connection. You've created an experience. Now let's get really down to the nitty-gritty of getting them where they need to go physically.
You can't go wrong with that, because life and business, shit gets in the way. Mm. People change. Mm. So we call that disruptors. And it's really, really important that we look at the disruptors before we get into the workout, because if they're not emotionally there, they can't physically be there. Mm. So trainers need to understand that it's all about the communication before the workout, because it changes day by day, especially with our aging population. So get into communication skills, get into looking at what's going on in the person's life so you can help keep their life on track and make changes in their life.
And also, I think we've got about 5 minutes to go, so if you've got another question or two, but I think it's also, and this seems like a no-brainer, but one of the mistakes that I saw and still see is the blurring of the lines between friendship and professional relationship. So if you're a trainer, or you're thinking about becoming a trainer, or you're new in the game, I want to say to you that your clients are not your friends. And that doesn't mean you can't be friendly, right? But you need to, and of course there'll be times where something develops and a friendship happens. That's cool. But my stance is, for the most part, that it is a professional relationship, and the more that you keep it trainer client, no, we don't hang out, we don't socialize, we don't go and do lunch three times a week. Because as soon as, and I don't think this works for everybody, but I think this should be the standard, and then you need to figure it out from there. But personally, my observation is, can clients be both clients and friends? The answer is yes. But does it become often problematic? The answer is yes. So even down to things like money, payment, bills, and what happens when that relationship gets messy, when now you're not client and trainer so much, you're friends that happen to do this thing. And I've just seen that where not only, and we don't need to go into the obvious space of inappropriate relationships, but just because it is a very personal, intimate thing that you are doing with people, in that you're talking to them about their feelings and their body and their identity and their self-esteem and their life and their lifestyle. So we're opening a door, and it's our responsibility in the opening of that door to stay professional, not to become part of their story, but rather to be the coach who helps them through. And I think the more that you keep yourself as a pure professional, doesn't mean you can't be caring, doesn't mean you can't be kind, doesn't mean you can't be friendly, doesn't mean that you can't be the best coach on the planet, but you're their coach, you're their trainer, you're not their fucking buddy. And as soon as you open the buddy door, trust me, you open a Pandora's box of potential problems.
So I want to finish with one question, and you really went into that there. So trainers, to become better, they need to educate themselves. Trainers are also being told that they need to specialize in certain areas, which is great, but quite often when they do that, they become fixated on that particular that area. So what would you say in regards to longevity in the industry for personal trainers? So we've spoken about what we believe is right, and my core belief is that education is the foundation and communication builds on that. So if we've got young personal trainers or people looking to get into the industry listening to us now, what direction, having an overview of the industry that we've just had, what would be your key points for them to have a sustainable income or sustainable within the industry? For me now, aging is the big one, because the demographic's growing by 34% a year. They're going to be lifelong clients, and they will want to stay with you for the rest of their life. So if you're ignoring it, you're really, really in trouble. Because the last thing you want to do is chase your tail, both for money and for clients. And this is the ideal solution if you're good at it. But from a trainer's perspective coming into the industry, what would you say as a journey, the key points for longevity would be?
That's a really good question. I remember I had a conversation 20 years ago or so with a young girl who just finished cert for a young lady, probably early 20s. And she said to me, and this was what I was thinking then, and I still kind of think the same. She said to me, okay, so I want to specialize. I said, okay. I said, what's your group? She goes, pregnant women. I go, okay. I go, well, and she goes, there's a real market for it. I go, yeah, but only for 9 months with each individual, right? Possibly 9 months, maybe six, right? And I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying, all right, so we went through the fours, and there were some fours, definitely. I said, here's the downside. As soon as you go, I'm going to offer a service that's only for women, well, then you cut out half your population. That's okay if you're cool with that. The next thing is only for women who are pregnant. Well, that cuts out anyone, or most people younger than 20, I guess, and most people older than 40, generally speaking, not always. But so you're really looking at the 20 to 40 kind of group. Well, then now you've reduced your target to, or your potential audience to, I don't know, whatever, how many of the total population is 20 to 40 year old women. But then you've got to find those women who are currently pregnant, who know about you and who can afford you, right? And so all of a sudden, you make this thing like pretty hard to work. Now, I'm not saying, so I said, this is what I think you should do. She's very passionate about it. I think you, so that's called niching, you know, or specializing. I think it's great because you're excited about it. And I love it when people, I think you should do that. I think you should also be able to be a generalist. So if my dad comes to you, and back then he was probably 60, he's got a sore back and high blood pressure and he's got fucking shit knees and he's a bit fat, you can train Ron as well. Just because Ron's not a pregnant woman, that's okay. So at your stage where you are at, you are new, you're trying to build a brand, build credibility, build experience, build a following, create engagement, build a reputation, and grow something. And so I think if you are wildly passionate about specializing in an area, you should pursue that. I also think in general terms, unless you are wildly passionate, then I think you should be a generalist. But I think you should be constantly, like I remember the first time, I don't even know how old I was, maybe 22, 3, where I started training my first menopausal woman. I'm like, well, fuck, this is a steep learning curve because I know nothing about, I'm a 22-year-old dude, what do I know? And then, but the time I started working, by the time I started working with my 100th lady who was in that stage of her life, my knowledge, my skills, my experience, right? Is that an area that I personally wanted to specialize in? Not particularly, but I still wanted to be able to work with that group because they're part of the population and they have needs and I want to understand their needs and I want to meet their needs. I want to be able to work with them. So too, the guys and girls that I've worked with who started in wheelchairs or the elite athletes, I think having a broad knowledge base is paramount so that you can prescribe exercise for anyone with any needs. But probably on top of that, if you go, you know what, I'm really passionate about 50-year-olds plus or whatever the group is, then I think that's always going to win out because that if you're passionate, you're much more likely to succeed rather than going, oh God, I guess I better specialize. I guess I better pick a demographic that isn't, you know, where there's a hole in the market and I'll try and fill that hole. I think that's a bad motive. So I think specializing is good, but you also want to be able to be a generalist in that, you know, anyone who walks through the door, male or female, old or young, athlete or not, you know, ill or not, injuries or not, that you can at least prescribe them exercise and give them advice which is consistent with what a fitness professional should be doing.
Awesome. Thank you very much for that, Craig. So evolving education and communication, the 100%,
two keys. 100%. Mate, so you've been great. So once again, everyone, the Healthy Aging Summit's in Brisbane. Ken's going to be there. Bobby Cappuccio, one of my best friends in the world, little fucking weirdo that he is, love him. Mel Tempest is going to be there. She's a superstar. She's just a killer. She just keeps evolving and doing amazing things. I love her energy. I love how she thinks. I love what she's doing in the space. She is a true innovator and pioneer, and she's an inspiration. Who else is going to be there? Do we know at this stage?
Yes, we do. We've got a gentleman called Steve Brosman. So Steve's ex-fitness industry as well, over 20 years, and he focuses on business and marketing. He's going to be talking about how to use video to become an authority in your area. So we've got some social media stuff with Owen Bowling talking about how you reach and communicate with your audience as well. And we've got a couple of people from the States which are really, really good. Cody Sipe, he's the founder of the Functional Aging Institute.
Awesome.
And he's going to share his working model of functional training for Miracles Fitness, which is over 50s personal training. And the two really big ones that are in our pre-con are Ryan Glatt. So Ryan looks at neuroscience and cognitive decline and Alzheimer's and stuff like that.
Amazing.
And Andrea Leonard, who runs the Cancer Education Training Institute, and she's going to be talking about how we can assist the recovery of clients who have different types of cancer as a PT. So there's something there for everybody. It's an amazing summit, and really looking forward to getting it on the calendar.
And if they're all great people, but if you haven't heard Bobby speak,
Bobby's amazing.
Bobby is an event. He is his own event. So it's like he's an event within an event. So
that is so true.
I've heard speakers all over the world, and I'm a little bit biased because he's one of my mates, but he is. I tell you what you don't want to do. You don't want to speak at a conference after Bobby.
That's for sure.
Because doesn't matter if you're fucking Russell Brand or Jerry Seinfeld or Ricky Gervais, you're going to be underwhelming. So, Ken, whatever you do, don't put me after him. All right, everyone. Thanks again, Ken. Anything else you want to plug?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Mate, thank you so much for making the journey. You're a superstar. I look forward to seeing you in March and sharing the love. I'll be posting more about the Healthy Aging Summit, folks. So for those of you who are in and about the fitness, health, wellness space, it's definitely worth considering heading out there. Thanks for your time, mate. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you very much.
Melissa?
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You didn't do much today. You just
I just sat there.
But anyway, well done anyway.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks.
See you, everyone. See you. Love your guts. The addict in your family might need you to take the first step for them. They Have Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment has the experience, staff, resources, and processes to help you help your loved one. DAHAB's model of intensive rehabilitation has revolutionised the practice of addiction treatment in Australia. Registered with the DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, DAHAB now offers rehabilitation programs for drug, alcohol, and gambling addiction, and is a private health fund approved treatment service. So if you or someone you care about is fighting addiction, there is hope. Addiction is treatable. Recovery is possible. Just ask me, call. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. DAHAB Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment. Call DAHAB on 1-800-329-422 or learn more at DAHAB, DAYHAB, or one word, .com.au.